Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. I'm Doug Fain. Glad to have you along as we continue to remember people, places, and things of Jessamine County. On today's program, we're going to be talking to Connie Royce McDonald about her grandparents, Bill and Renlyn Foley. And we'll do that right after this word from one of our fine sponsors here at Jess FM.
Jessamine County Health Department offers so much more than you think. In addition to medical services, they also offer community education and environmental programs that are usually free to the public. These programs help fulfill their mission to promote, protect, and improve the health and wellness of our community. Visit the Jessamine County Health Department's website at jessaminehealth.org. That's jessaminehealth.org for a complete listing of all programs and services available to the public.
Good morning and welcome to All Things Jessamine. Glad to have you on this Saturday. We continue to learn more about people, places, and things in our county. Today, we're going to be talking about a couple of people. I did not know him, but I knew her. One of the sweetest ladies that ever walked in this county. Her name was Renlyn Foley. Miss Renlyn, as most people knew her, at least as I knew her. I think we've even heard her referred to as Granny Foley. And she lived here in town with her husband. And with us today, we're going to talk to her granddaughter, Connie Royce McDonald. Connie is, she'll tell you who her parents were, but her mom was a daughter to Miss Renlyn. Good morning.
Good morning.
We want to reminisce a little bit. And like I say, I remember her. I knew her. I didn't know him. So what you tell me about him is going to be new to me. Back last Christmas, we did our old-time radio show about old Nicholasville, and you actually played the part of your grandmother.
That was a real treat for
me. For to be able to do that. And the one of the things about that role was the fact that she had with her baked goods.
Right.
And that is what I remember most about Miss Renlyn. People like my mom remembers much more about her than that because she knew her growing up. But anyway, we'll get started here. Do you want to start with him or her, or do you just, it doesn't matter because we're eventually going to tie the two together.
I think let's start with her, if
okay,
that's okay.
Sure.
You said you didn't know him. I didn't either. He died before I was born.
Okay.
So I don't have as much information about him as I do about her.
Okay.
I'll tell you that her name was Renlyn Hewlett Duncan Foley. Her parents were Ernest and Lavinia or Vinnie Duncan, Cobb Duncan. Her grandparents were James William and Mattie Birch Duncan, and William Henry and Margaret Burdine Cobb.
Now, let me ask you, if you don't care, I'll just jump in here once in a while. You're mentioning two family names that have been around the Jessamine County for a long, long time, and that being the Duncans on one side, the Cobbs on the other. So let me ask you, was this the same Duncan as Bobby J. Duncan, who used to have Duncan's Menswear?
There is a relationship.
There's a relation. And on the other side, the Cobbs, you know, there's all of them are related, I guess, but most of the Cobbs, Hubert Cobb, that bunch. Of course, you got Gordon more nowadays with Phyllis Bradshaw and Linda Downing and that bunch. You've also got like Tommy Cobb. Were all those related to?
All are related.
Okay.
I can't tell you exactly how, but I can tell you who they're related to back in the family.
So her family, both sides, have been residents of our county for, quite a long time.
Yes.
Okay.
Generations.
All right.
Many generations.
Okay. She was a one child. She have siblings?
She had siblings. She had four younger sisters, Birch, Margaret, Ernestine, and Minnie. She also had a baby brother, Ryan, who died as an infant. Mm-hmm. She was born in 1899. She was born April 23rd. So she lived in a couple of different centuries.
You mentioned she had four sisters?
Yes.
Now, are those sisters people who would have been around here that we would recognize names of?
I don't think so.
Okay.
They all, after they married, they moved away. Some of them lived in Cincinnati, one lived in Tennessee, and one lived in Phoenix, Arizona.
Now, do you know what her parents did? Were they farm family?
They were farm family.
Okay, so she's raised up on the farm.
Yes.
With all these girls and her education, did she go beyond a certain grade? Did she have, after high school, anything like that?
Well, she lived down in the Mount Lebanon area, and so she went to Mount Lebanon School, which was a one-room schoolhouse. Her teacher was Miss Elva Sparks, who was a young woman from Maryland, I found out. Later on, she went to Chrisman Mill School.
Okay.
And her parents separated when she was a teenager, and her mother and she and her siblings moved to town.
Okay.
And that ended her schooling. She went to school till she was 14.
Okay.
She was really proud that she had a 98 average, but she had to stay home and take care of the younger children.
Was she the eldest?
She was the oldest. And so her mom worked at a department store, and she had to stay with her younger siblings and take care of them.
We're talking, 1913, 1919, we're talking the early teens.
Exactly.
I mean, 100 years ago is what we're talking
Absolutely.
About.
Absolutely.
So her mother works for some store here, I guess, in the community.
Yes, I'm not sure which one.
But. And she stays home. All right, so she's 14 years old. She's basically become a mom, if you will,
right?
Raising these kids. Do we need to move on to get Bill caught up to that point, or do you need to go on with Renlin?
Well, I can tell you, well, I'll back up just a little bit and tell you a little bit of some things she told me about her growing up years.
Oh, yeah.
When she lived in the Mount Lebanon community, they lived on a farm, and they had horses, and she really loved horses. And she broke horses, which, as you know, she was quite a tiny woman.
Mm-hmm.
So imagining her breaking horses is a little amusing. But she really liked that. She talked about racing the boys to town and things like that. They had their activities in the country, like they enjoyed parties. She talked about quilting parties, molasses candy parties, and Halloween parties.
Wow.
She also told me about having a revival at the church, and that was a big community event.
Yeah.
She told me a story about her grandparents. They usually would entertain whatever visiting ministers there were, and this one particular year, their family entertained them instead of her grandparents. And in the middle of the night, there was a large bang, and they didn't know what it was, and they ran in, and the slats had fallen out of the bed, and the ministers had collapsed.
Oh my gosh.
And so they were quite embarrassed by that. And so were the ministers.
And we don't know whether it was the ministers that caused it or the slats were just wore out.
We don't know. She also, when she was 11 or 12 years old, she would stay with a neighbor lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she earned 5 cents a night to stay with this neighbor lady. And her husband worked with the railroad, and he was away. And I guess she was afraid to stay by herself. So that was one of her activities. And she also liked to crochet. Mm-hmm. And she made a lot of pretty crochet work. And back then, a lot of the women made their own clothing, and they would sew this fancy work into their clothing. So that was how she started making money back then.
So by the time that they came to town, she was very adapt in helping to raise these sisters.
Yes.
I mean, she knew all this kind of stuff. She'd learned all this, and she was really kind of knew how to do it.
I think a lot of the young ladies back then spent a lot of time doing housework and cooking and sewing and that sort of thing, and learned it at a very young age from their mothers.
What age did she meet your grandfather?
She was 18 years old. And she had a steady boyfriend at the time.
Yeah.
It was World War I was going on, and he went to war, and they had said that if he came back, that they would marry.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, she was staying with some friends near Lexington, and they went to this induction center up at the Red Mile Trotting Track area, and they were going to take food to some of the soldiers. And the boys were allowed to leave later in the day. And so they met these boys, and introductions were made all around. And my grandfather, Bill Foley, was one of these young men. And it was love at first sight for both of them.
Wow.
When she saw him, she said, "He's going to be my husband if I can get him."
What about the other guy? Did he come back?
He did. And she ended up having to write him a Dear John letter.
Oh my
and it
gosh.
Was very hard for her to do. And she was very grief-stricken and embarrassed by that sort of thing.
Wow. All right, so let's jump over the fence and talk about Bill Foley. Tell me a little bit about what you know about him, where he came from.
Okay, his parents were William Luther Foley and Lena Florence Adams Foley. And he had siblings who were Maud, Margaret, Sally, Stanley, and Morris. And just as a connector here, Maud is May Florence Hager's mother.
Really?
Yes.
You know, now that you mention, it seems like I remember Ellistine maybe telling me that there was a connection between Miss Renlin and his wife, May Florence, Mama Sissy, we called her, mm-hmm.
Aunt Sissy.
And yeah, so May Florence's mother, and she was a Jacobs.
Right.
Her mother, Mary Jacobs, mm-hmm. was related to...
She was a Foley. She was Foley's sister.
Your grandfather's sister.
So, in other words, my mother and my Florence are first cousins.
Oh, gosh. Okay. Go ahead with your story then about him.
Okay. So, they meet, and I don't really know much about his upbringing mm-hmm. except that they also lived in, they were farming, mm-hmm. a farming family. I also know that his father died suddenly, I think from a heart attack, right around this same time.
Yeah.
It wasn't very much before this. And after they met and had their, like a kind of a beginning of a courtship, mm-hmm. they both got the flu. It was the 1918 flu epidemic. Mm-hmm. And as a matter of fact, when he had the flu, they thought he had died and people stayed up with him. He was, I guess, in a coma. And
your grandfather.
My grandfather. And he revived the next morning. So it's a good thing they didn't have embalming back then.
Yeah, but they probably had some more broken slats because people probably were scared to death when he came back.
I think that's probably the case.
So that was in 1918, you said?
Yes, and the armistice was signed, of course, November 11th. And
right.
They married Thanksgiving Day, which was November 28th, and they married at the Methodist Parsonage, which is the house that's at the corner of Maple and Third, where Gary Hager's family used to live.
Yeah,
that was where they married.
That would be for people that's, if you go up Maple Street by the courthouse and you come to the very first stoplight, it's the house on your right on the corner, which would be the northeast corner of that section. Yeah, where Lyman Hager and Dorothy lived. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So after they married, they moved in with his mother, Lena Foley, who, like I said, was a mm-hmm. widow at the mm-hmm. time. And that was in the South Elkhorn area. And Granddaddy worked as a mechanic at the Buick Garage in Lexington. And after a while, my Aunt Evelyn was expected. They decided they would stay in Nicholasville to be nearer Dr. Welch, who was the doctor they wanted to deliver her.
So we're starting the family now, is what it is. And Evelyn was the oldest, right? So that the next question, and by the way, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Welch, you may have heard mentioned on our programs before. Was he one on Main Street, or was he the one down on, there was two Dr. Welches?
His name was Tom Welch, and he died in a fire.
In a fire. Mm-hmm. And I believe, was it up around where Nicholasville Forest is?
That's the place exactly.
Yes.
Where, I mean, the same house, but that was
the lot, mm-hmm. I think, where the house was that Dr. Welch died in.
Yes.
They stayed here. She was pregnant, mm-hmm. and they wanted to be close to him for the delivery. Is that correct?
Yes.
All right. So tell us about the siblings. Who are the, and then we'll focus mainly on your grandmother, but who are her siblings?
You mean my mother's siblings?
I guess I am talking about your mother. Who other than your mom? Yeah, who are the children?
Evelyn was the oldest. Mm-hmm. Then my mom was next, Dolores.
Right.
And then Billy Clay was the third. And
okay. Those
so
are the
all
three.
Girls. Uh-huh.
Who did they marry? I mean, I know, we'll focus more on your mother, too, in a moment. Tell them about Evelyn and Billy.
Okay. Evelyn's husband was Johnny Johnson. Mm-hmm. He died, and later she married someone named Bill Harmon. My mother was married to Jean Royce.
Right.
And then later married Ray Waits.
Right.
My Aunt Billy was married to A.P. Schneider.
Now, your granddad, Bill Foley, is working at a Buick dealership, you said.
Until they came to town to stay near the doctor, then he got a job with Sutherland Chevrolet,
mm-hmm.
also as a mechanic.
Well, that would have been for Mr. Sutherland.
Right.
And Miss Sutherland, who was, for those listening, Pete Sutherland is our mayor. We're talking about his grandparents. We're talking about his dad, John Sutherland's parents, who originally opened the dealership. And that leads us to another program we have had before. You may remember from the past that while building their building down here on Main Street, Mr. Sutherland died. And Miss Sutherland became the first female Chevrolet dealership owner in the country. And it was right here in our own county. So that's what we're tying here to Bill Foley. Did he retire from Sutherland's?
He died before he
was did? Okay.
Evelyn was born in April of 1920, and when she was 3 weeks old, they bought some furniture and moved to the corner of Walnut and First Street. And Dr. Matthews bought the house and moved into part of it, and later he decided he wanted the use of the whole house, so they moved to Oak and First. None of these houses are in existence at this time.
Oak and First, which was that the corner that is now the parking lot?
I think so.
Okay, so that would have been next door then to the old, what used to be the old Jessamine County Fire Station. At one time was the roller rink.
I'm not positive, and,
yes. Yeah, it would have had to have been on that corner, I would think. Okay.
So during about this time, Granny's mother and father had a financial settlement, and Granny's mother got some money and bought two houses on Lake Street, and she moved into one of them, and she rented the other one to them for $25 a month.
Wow. Now, what year was that?
This was around 1920.
Yeah, $25 a month was a lot of money, folks. Mm-hmm.
Later on, they moved to Lexington to Patterson Street, and Granddaddy returned to the Buick garage. After that, they moved to Short Street, and that's where they were living when my mother was born in 1927. And she weighed 9.5 pounds when she was born.
Your mom?
My tiny little mother.
She don't weigh much more than that now.
Not much. And it was a very, very difficult birth.
Yeah.
Very dangerous birth. And my grandmother's doctor, Dr. Taylor, warned her not to have any more children. Mm-hmm. However, 2.5 years later, another daughter, Billy Clay, was born in 1930.
Your mother, you mentioned a while ago, she was a small lady.
Mm-hmm.
Was your granddad, I remember seeing that picture.
Was small.
He wasn't very big either. And of course, your mom, was your mom's sister small?
Yes.
Like her?
Like her. They think I'm a giant.
Yeah. They all look up to you, don't they?
They do.
Literally. So they're in Lexington. Billy Clay comes along. They've got three girls now. At what point did they get back here?
I think during the Depression, I guess several things happened. One was that Granddaddy went to the garage to work one day, and there was a padlock on the door.
Oh, really?
And his tools were inside. So it had closed for
the one in Lexington.
The one in Lexington.
Okay.
And not long after this, he came down with an inflammation of the nerves. I'm not really sure what that is, except to know that he couldn't even bear a sheet to touch his skin.
Oh, my gosh.
And he was in the VA hospital for about 3 months. And, of course, with the loss of the income, they were forced to sell their furniture and move in with Granddaddy's mother again. Mm-hmm. And by this time, she was remarried, and his name was Doc Wissman. My aunts and my mother were sent to stay with different sisters of my grandmother, so their aunts. Mm-hmm. And one of my aunts was expecting during this time, and so my grandmother went there to help take care of her, and she ended up staying there for about 7 weeks. And soon after this period of time, they moved to 4th Street. And they had a very bad experience. I think they had some neighbors who stole from them or something like that. And so they moved back to Lexington to 2nd Street, and the girls played in Gratz Park while they lived at that
place. They were all over the place. Between here and Lexington, they were back and forth a lot, weren't they?
They were. And I think where times were hard money was short, there were just not a lot of opportunities for them during this period of time.
Yeah.
But on September 2nd, 1935, to answer the question you asked me to begin with, they moved to the house where she would live the rest of her life at 110 2nd Street here in Nicholasville.
Now, that's where I remember, of course, her being.
And me too. And they rented from Mrs. Wagner. She owned that house
Now, Mrs. Wagner, is that the same Wagner whose husband built the house where my dad had his art gallery.
Yes, Dr. L.C.
Dr. Geller. Yeah. Folks, the one we're talking about now is the big brick house on the left side of Maple, across the street from Nixville United Methodist. There's a huge house. It was built by Dr. Wagner, and eventually my dad owned that as an art gallery back in the 70s. This house that you're talking about would have been about the third house, I guess, behind Nixville Christian Church.
It was the house on the corner.
On the corner. Mm-hmm. And at one point in time, it sat across the street from the brand new Withers Memorial Library.
That's right. I have a lot of happy memories of staying at my grandmother's house and spending time at the library.
Right across the street from the library. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to jump on a different subject, because that leads me to ask, is that where you got your want to be a teacher?
It could be. I did spend a lot of time. I'm surprised I didn't become a librarian, because I spent lots of time in there shelving books. And that was during the time that Ann Young
was there. Yes.
And
of course.
Sue Peel.
Yeah.
And I loved that place. I enjoyed it. But I went to the library before it was there, when it was down on Main Street.
Yes, in the Central Bank parking lot,
right,
where there's now Central Bank parking lot. There used to be a building there, folks, on the corner. Library was on the top.
Second floor. Uh-huh.
And the bottom floor was the post office.
Post office.
Yeah.
That, my first experience with a library was at that building.
Okay, so we now know she is on Second Street. And what year, then, did you lose your granddad?
He died in 1956. So during the time that they lived there, a lot of things happened. Mm-hmm. Her mother and father were both ill. His house burned, and he moved in with them.
Mr. Duncan.
Yes. Now, my grandmother never drove, and so any place she went, she walked. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. her mother was ill, and she lived on Lake Street, so my grandmother would take meals and that sort of thing. She would walk up there every day.
Wow, that's a pretty good walk,
too. It's a pretty good walk.
Yeah.
Granddaddy got throat cancer and had to go to Louisville for treatments. And for a while, she took a room up there mm-hmm. so that she could be nearby and look mm-hmm. after him. And during these years, her parents both died. Her father died in 1949 and her mother in 54. And my mother's marriage to Joe Crow broke up during this time. So she and my brother, Harvey Crow, moved in with Granny and Granddaddy. So she had a lot of responsibility, a lot of taking care of people mm-hmm. and that sort of thing during that period of time. And she cared for my brother so that my mother, who was a telephone operator then, could, of course, work. And Granddaddy died January 30th, 1956. So I never met him.
Listen, one of the hardest jobs in the world is to be a housewife. We all know that. But she never had a job outside the home then, right?
Not then, but
later she did.
After Granddaddy died,
okay.
Now she's a 57-year-old widow.
Yeah.
And she's always been a very independent person.
And the girls were all grown by this point.
Yes.
Okay.
So she tried to think of a way that she could make a living.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she had always sold those advertising book matches and Christmas cards and things like that.
I have forgotten about that.
And the election materials and things like that. But she tried to think of what else can I do? What am I good at?
Mm-hmm.
And she always loved babies and children.
Mm-hmm.
And during that period of time, when a woman would have a baby, she often had some type of nurse come and stay in the home for a while. Back then, you stayed mm-hmm. in bed for 2 weeks
right.
or something after you
right.
had a baby.
Right.
So she decided that she would be good at taking care of newborn babies or elderly people that needed care, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. sort of thing,
mm-hmm.
that private duty nurse kind of job.
Mm-hmm.
So my youngest cousin... At that time, my Aunt Billy had my youngest cousin, so she told her obstetrician and her pediatrician about my grandmother, and so they would give her as a reference.
Yeah.
So she started taking care of a lot of babies. She took care of a lot of people around here. She also took care of people other places. One time, she went to the governor's mansion and took care of Governor Chandler's grandson. It was Ben Chandler.
Ben.
His parents were going out of town for a short period of time.
Yeah.
And he was just a couple of months old.
Yeah.
So she went there and took care of him at the governor's mansion. It was a big highlight of her life. The Chandlers treated her like a queen. They were wonderful to her. They treated her like family. And Thanksgiving happened during the time that they were there, and they had a big family dinner. She said there were 23 people around the table, and she was seated next to Mrs. Chandler. And they were just, it was just a big highlight for her because she got to have dinner in the governor's mansion.
Wow. And I'm assuming somewhere along the line in all these years, you've talked to Ben about this.
I think my mother has.
Yeah.
I actually talked to Governor Chandler about it one time.
Oh, yeah?
When he was on the board at UK, I happened to run into him one afternoon. He was waiting for his ride, and I mentioned my grandmother, and he remembered her, of course, the way he was with people.
He remembered everybody, yes.
So we had a nice chat on the steps of the administration building at UK.
And, of course, being from Versailles, Happy Chandler is known for always saying that if he ever had to move anywhere in the world, it would be Jessamine County. It was like his second home, and that's quite appropriate that he would have somebody like her from helping them.
My brother had a dog one time, and he named it Happy Talk. And the reason he named it that was because everybody was talking about the election. And he said, all I hear around here is happy talk.
So that's funny. So she's taking care of babies. She's taking care of elderly people. She has got a full-time job going, basically.
Mm-hmm. One of the people that she took care of was Dr. Selby Coleman, who had a home in Jessamine County, but he also had a big home in Detroit, Michigan. He had been the vice and deputy consul of Bombay at one time. He was a pharmacist.
Really?
And he was elderly and nearly blind. And she traveled to Detroit to take care of him and his home.
How did she get to these places? She didn't drive.
She flew some.
Oh, she just flew, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
She
took trains some places,
okay.
And she flew. But she also stayed with a family in Chicago, taking care of their children, and she got to do some sightseeing there. The family would draw maps for her, and she'd take a city bus and go here and there, and she got to watch Frank Reynolds broadcast the news.
Really?
She thought that was,
well, that's going way back.
Yeah. So during this time, Mrs. Wagner passed away, and the house went up for auction. Now, she had rented all these years, so she was wanting to buy the house, and she wasn't really sure if she was able to, and she went to the bank, and she talked to Brian Risk and Leo Wild.
Well, First National. And that's probably when it was over here on Main Street where the old radio station used to be.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they assured her she could borrow the money and offered to bid the house for her, and several people offered to bid the house.
Yeah.
And she said, no, I want them to know it's me bidding. And so Cecil Johnson was the auctioneer.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So in the meantime, she had to show the house to prospective buyers and that sort of thing. And
they was going to bid against her.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one gentleman told her he was going to buy the house and told her what her rent was going to go up to and that sort of
thing.
He
was sure, wasn't he?
He was. But when the bidding went on, eventually he was out, and she kept bidding, and there was a lady who bid against her. And she said she knew what her limit was, and she was so scared if she bid a big amount that she would bid a big amount too, and she would be out. So she was bidding $5 at a time.
Worked Cecil to death.
And so finally that lady was out, and the house was knocked off to my grandmother. And Cecil Johnson leaned over to my grandmother and said, I thought she'd never quit, talking about the other lady. And somebody in the crowd said, kiss her once for me too. So I always love that story.
Yes.
So she basically bought the house twice. She bought it through renting, and then she bought it again. By this time, it's the 60s, and she has 9 grandchildren, and I'm one of those 9 grandchildren.
Right.
And we spent a lot of time with her. She was a wonderful grandmother, and I'm going to get choked up talking about it. I really enjoyed spending time with her and going to her house.
Yeah. And she was a typical grandmother.
Oh, she was. She was.
I mean, she just, what I remember especially, she, you know, you're talking about her bacon.
Mm-hmm.
She liked us down at the old radio station.
Mm-hmm.
and would bring baked goods down there and distribute them to all of us. Of course, at that time, it was Bill Laney was there and Al Snyder and Dale Wright, myself. And even before that, even before, you know, probably some of the old people, Charlie Esposito going back in years. But I know, I guess that's how I first met her. My mother would have known her prior to that. In fact, they may have lived, I don't know if they lived close to each other, but it seems like they knew each other some way, because I've heard her talk about Miss Rinland, you know, knowing her.
Well, I know that my grandmother, she loved her community, and she thought of the post office and all the stores downtown, all those people as her neighbors, since she lived so close. Yeah. And she wasn't able to get out and go places very much. Right. I mean, she went with us some and that sort of thing. But as far as on a daily basis, like I said, she didn't drive. Right. And by this time, she's getting older. But she really used her baking almost like a ministry to people.
Sure.
She felt like that was one thing that she could do for somebody else. I felt like her whole life had been doing for others.
And, you know, it seems like now that you say that, you talk about the fact she couldn't get out. It seems like I remember her calling and actually going to her house to pick up a plate of cookies that she would have made for us.
She would do that. She would call people and say, after you get off work, if you want to stop by, and I've got a little treat for you.
That's right. That's right there on that corner. How did it feel to you, knowing how you felt about her, when the idea was presented to you to play her in the play, in our old time radio play? What'd you think? What was your first reaction?
My first reaction was to feel very humbled, because to me, my grandmother was just an average person in Nicholasville.
Right.
But to me,
well, she was a superstar.
Exactly. I've never known anybody that had as big a heart as she did.
Right.
And it was just an honor to get to just show people a little bit of what she would have been like back then.
And in the play, folks, what happened was is that there was a big snowstorm coming. It was Christmas time. It was all centered around the old Ben Franklin store. And she came in to buy yarn. And typical, she had a basket with her that had baked goods in it. And everybody in there in the play and knew that she had baked goods and were very glad to see her. She bought her yarn and made that appearance. But Connie, her granddaughter, actually played that part. Something you probably didn't ever think that would happen.
It
wasn't on your bucket list, but not many people get to do that. You didn't know your granddad, so I can't ask this question to you about him, but I can about her. And you've heard enough of these programs to know probably what I'm going to ask. Give me a word or two to describe Rinland Foley.
Big-hearted and selfless.
Yeah. Goes hand in hand, of course. Yeah.
Generous.
Yeah.
Generous spirit.
And loved her community. She loved where she was from. She was proud of the fact that she was part of us. And she showed it by helping others, which is what we should all do. Tell us about the end. When did we lose her and how?
I guess the beginning of the end was she fell and broke her hip. And she recovered from that, but she never was able to live at home again.
Yeah.
And she died in 1990 at the age of 90.
Whew, gosh, it doesn't seem like it's been that long. 90 years old in two different centuries, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But she went from horse and buggy days to man on the moon and beyond.
The one thing I remember the most about her is what you said, and that was her kind-heartedness. You know, I can still see her walk in that station door with that basket of baked goods, whatever it might be, and to get called to her home. But just a sweet lady. I mean, if I had to just use the words to describe her from what I knew, it would be what I said earlier. Typical grandmother. The one, if you had to pick a grandmother, that's who you'd want to have, is somebody like her.
I know that when I get to heaven someday, she'll be meeting me at the gate.
Yeah, and she'll be there and probably with a big plate of lemon bars or brownies, I'm sure. Connie, our time is up, but thank you for coming in. We do need to get together, though, because you've got a whole other set of family that the Royces that we probably could talk about, too, that we haven't even gone into. But I'm glad that we got to remember her and your granddad especially, but her, because a lot of people knew her. A lot of people in this community knew about Miss Rinland, so...
Well, thank you, Doug. I appreciate it.
My thanks to Connie for coming in and sharing about the lives of her grandparents. Also appreciate you coming in every Saturday at 11 for All Things Jessamyn. We'll do it again next week. And don't forget, I'm here every weekday morning to get you up and going on The Doug Fain Show, 6 to 8 a.m. on Jess FM 105.9.
Jessamyn County Health Department offers so much more than you think. In addition to medical services, they also offer community education and environmental programs that are usually free to the public. These programs help fulfill their mission to promote, protect, and improve the health and wellness of our community. Visit the Jessamyn County Health Department's website at jessamynhealth.org. That's jessamynhealth.org for a complete listing of all programs and services available to the public.